You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, fellas? Welcome back to Combos Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. Oh my goodness, you guys. Today has to be one of my favorite episodes I've done in a really long time, maybe of all time. And it is with global head coach of Nike Running, Coach Bennett, or Chris Bennett. But he goes by Coach Bennett pretty much. I'm sure you guys are familiar with him because if you have ever used the Nike Run Club app and you've done a guided run, he's the one that narrates the majority of those runs. He has a very calming voice. Honestly, I want him to be in my ear every time I go running because this episode not only motivated me, but it also just kind of grounded me. And it just made me even more passionate about running, just talking to someone like Coach Bennett, who is obviously super passionate about the sport of running and all levels of running. Anyways, I really hope you guys enjoyed today's episode because I know I did. Before we get into today's episode, I want to talk about one of my new sponsors of the podcast, Open. Open is a digital mindfulness platform combining breathwork, meditation, and movement. I cannot tell you guys how many times people have told me to start doing mindfulness practices. I have talked nonstop about how high my cortisol levels are. I've talked to my therapist about it, obviously people in my personal life about it. The number one thing people have told me to do is get into a mindfulness and meditation routine. And when I discovered the app called Open, it has changed the game for me. I wake up, the first thing I think about, coffee. Obviously, it's the name of this podcast. But before I allow myself to have my coffee, I wake up to my alarm, I grab my phone, and immediately open the Open app. They have a bunch of different classes under 10 minutes, so it's been super easy for me to like start a routine and stick with it. With meditation and mindfulness, I can get really overwhelmed, especially starting out, because my thoughts are racing and I can't imagine meditating for 30 minutes. So every single morning, I've been doing a 5 to 20 minute breathwork class to clear my head and my racing thoughts and just get me ready for the day before I have my coffee, because I will have my coffee. You know, if there's something about me, it's that I will have my coffee in the morning. I immediately have been feeling more energized and just level-headed with a breathwork class from Open, because it just sets me up for a great day. I do the meditations in bed because I'm lazy and it's just really easy for me to do that first thing when I wake up so that I don't have any distractions going on. I also do them at night because I am very wired at night, probably because of the caffeine consumption I have throughout the day, and I'm just an energetic person. So I love to do the meditations in bed. They really help my entire body relax and put myself to sleep super quickly. Like I said, mindfulness can be a really overwhelming topic. And to start out, it can almost be intimidating. So what I love about Open is that it's designed for all levels and it's just the easiest way to get into a routine. They also have unlimited live and on-demand breathwork, meditation, yoga, Pilates, and more, which means that you can connect directly with your teachers during in-class live streams. So let's take a class together. Join me. Open is giving Combos Over Cold Brew listeners 30 days free when you visit withopen.com/coldbrew. Again, you can join me on Open by going to withopen.com/coldbrew. Let me know what you guys think. I'll see you in class. Now let's get into today's episode with Coach Bennett. Okay, Coach Bennett,
I'm excited to have you on the podcast. You've been requested many a time from my audience, who I'm sure listens to you on the Nike Run Club app. So I'm excited to pick your brain a little bit. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Do you prefer to be called Chris or Coach? Because I didn't know what to refer to you as.
It's weird. It feels awkward to be called Chris, which is weird considering that's my name. But yeah, there's a few people that still call me Chris and I'm related to them. So it's coach is fine. I'll probably delay my reaction to my answer if you do say Chris. So I'll go, who is she talking to? I thought it was just us. So coach is good.
Okay, that sounds good. You are the global head coach of Nike Running. That's a pretty legit title. That holds a lot of value.
I don't know if it holds a lot of value. It sounds impressive, but you know, that doesn't mean it. I'm impressive. It's just the words sound cool. You know, I would have gone for something like, you know, almighty something or other, but I guess, you know, global coach is fine too. But the word coach is the coolest part of the title.
Yeah. Well, I was stalking your LinkedIn too. You're also the senior director of Nike Global Running. So that one is also pretty legit.
Yeah. I like the coach one better. The coach title's more impressive, you know?
Yeah. Well, we're going to get into a lot of the coaching stuff, but what is like your main role at Nike beyond the coaching element?
I work in Nike Running, and that entails also the app, but the way I look at it is, and I kind of have a interesting job because I get to float around the entire sport. So I could be writing, you know, the training for one of the plans that we have globally, or it could be writing scripts for any of the guided runs that we have inside the app. Could be sitting down with the product team and talking about, you know, the new peg, or a marketing team and talking about, you know, how to, you know, talk to the athlete at the start of the year in a way that makes sense. So there's a lot. And then there's live events. So it could be helping out an event where, you know, you're talking to elite athletes or talking to a high school team at NXN. So it's all over the place, which I think for some people that they don't like that. They like to know, I'm going to do this today and then I'm going to do that. But I like it. I just want to be involved in the sport. So that's what's most important to me. If I'm doing something that is not kind of directly related to the sport or a runner, my eyes tend to just kind of glaze over, you know, and which Zoom helps, you know, with that, because you can pretend that you have a bad connection and like turn the screen off and you know, go to the other room and look up results or something like that and pretend that, you know, it's Zoom's fault and not yours. But yeah, I'm basically involved in the sport.
Well, lucky for you, this podcast is a lot about running, so I don't think you'll be too bored.
Great. Well, I mean, we could talk movies or books or teaching or something like that too. That would be fine as well. So if you get bored of talking about running, we can go somewhere else.
No, clearly I don't, because I have a whole podcast dedicated to it that I do every week. So I'm probably just like you. But that honestly is really cool, because you're literally involved in every level of sport, and I'm of the sport of running, which I'm sure it's so different from someone that has never run a step in their life to then you're going and talking to elite Nike athletes that are going to the Olympics. So that just must be wild, like to have to adapt to that depending on the day.
Yeah. The thing that's interesting to me is I don't really see that much of a difference between someone who's really brand new to running and someone who's, you know, trying to win a world championship. By the way, if it's noisy, it's just typical Oregon weather. We were just talking a couple of minutes ago about it. It was kind of cloudy and now it's literally hailing. What looks like dime sized pieces of hail. I mean, this is the weirdest.
I feel like it doesn't
season.
Does it
ever.
Hail? And I feel like when I was living there, it didn't hail that much.
It's this spring. It hails maybe every other day, every two or three days. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I'm trying not to read into it. I don't want to search like, what does hail in Oregon mean? So I don't want to know. Back to the question. Yeah. I don't see much of a difference, because I mean, if you really think about it, that everyone kind of goes through the same thing. once you start running, regardless of how fast you're running. It's and you just kind of repeat the cycle. You know what I mean? It's like you're starting out. Well, maybe it's you're starting a new season, or you're getting over being sick or getting over being hurt, or and then you have to do more than just run once you get to a certain point because you don't want to break down, or you have a good day, you got a bad day. You know, it's just, it's all the same. I think where we get into trouble is when that person who's never run before thinks that there's more space between them and someone who is already running than there already is. And then someone who's running doesn't realize that, you know, one of the great ways to just consistently get better is to just be incredibly humble. And that doesn't mean, a lot of people sometimes hear that and they think I'm saying, don't celebrate what you're doing as much, or, and I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying like, you have to just always realize that there's always something you can do to get better, and there's always something to celebrate. But that's the same with everyone who's around you, you know? And so just remember, like you share a lot more with the people on the trail than you don't share. So it's nice sometimes to actually get to have these conversations and walk away and be, super inspired and fired up and a little in awe of someone. And later in the day, tell somebody and they're like, oh, who'd you talk to today? Was it Eliud Kipchoge? And you're like, no, it was just this woman named Martha, because what she pulled off is just as exceptional as maybe what Kipchoge did. So yeah. That's a cool part of our sport.
Yeah, honestly, like since starting this podcast and just having conversations with different people from different levels of the sport, like, I mean, I'm very tuned into the elite side of it, just being a former elite runner myself. But I think the most inspiring conversations I've had are with people that actually aren't in the elite side of it, because I feel like the elite side of it is kind of predictable. It's like, okay, how'd you get into the sport? You ran through high school, you were really good, then you got recruited and whatever. But the most interesting conversations I've had are with people that just randomly started running because, I don't know, their husband forced them to run a 5K and they fell in love with it, or like during COVID, they just needed something to do. Like, I don't know. It's just very cool to see the different levels of sport. But then also, like, touching on what you said, I kind of look back at my running career and I guess not that much changed from when I first started running until I stopped running, like when college was over and everything. Like, the cycle is exactly the same. It just, I guess you just learn more about yourself and what works and what doesn't. But I don't know. Yeah, just all like the same.
Yeah, the physical side. Yeah, the physical, like the physical things may change in terms of like how far, how long, or how fast. And then sometimes the purposes change. But if you strip those away, like, I bet if you look back and you played around with some of your interviews, okay, with some of the athletes you've had, and you stripped out the numbers, and you just talked about like a really great run or a great race, and then you have someone who's on their 11th run ever, and you take out the times and the distances, and you just have them describe a great run, they're going to be really close. And if you talk about like a really hard run, and you strip out the times and the distances and the pace of that person on their 11th run and the person who, you know, just qualified for the Olympics, they're going to sound the same.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel good. I ate too close to, you know, the run, or it was really humid out, or I don't know what was going on. I felt great yesterday. I felt terrible today, or I just really didn't feel like doing it. And I mean, it's the same things, and it's the same on the other side too, which is, you know, I was struggling and then I got my second win and I got in there, or I got onto her shoulder and I just like grinded this one out. Next thing you know, I was, 400 meters in the finish and suddenly I had something, or, it's the same stuff. The only difference is the time on the clock for the most part. So
it's so funny. I feel like running is such a simple sport, but people can also make it so complicated. Like, once you get to the really elite side of stuff, I mean, then you have more technology and stuff integrated into it and money's involved and everything. But like you said, it's just the same
situation. Running is really simple. Runners are very complicated. I mean, and I think that's kind of the way you got to look at that, because the human component is what can trip you up a little bit, because we all are all different. Like, on paper, it makes sense. Like, well, if I run this, then I'll run this and then I'll run that. And it's like, well, did you get in an argument with your boyfriend or girlfriend last night? Because suddenly that changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, did you get a terrible night of sleep? You know, are you dealing with, you know, getting over being sick? Are you, you know, just nervous because of what's going on in the world? Like, all of this stuff comes with you to the starting line. And I think that's where running to me gets very, very interesting, at least from a coaching perspective. It's like, if you take the entirety of the human being you're working with and you say, okay, let's work with the running and have the running work with you. That's coaching. I mean, that's real coaching. It's not ignoring the human side of the athlete. It's not ignoring the human side of the athlete, because yeah. If you do that, that's how athletes get hurt, or worse, that's where they learn how to hate the sport as opposed to love it.
Yeah. I want to talk about how you got into coaching, because I was stalking your bios and just learning more about you. So you ran at UNC. That's correct, right? And then you ran for, the farm team. What was that? What was that
called? Yes, the Nike Farm Team, which was the precursor to OTC Elite.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was like trying to connect the dots, but it was based in Palo Alto.
Based in Palo Alto, yeah. And it was started by Jeff Johnson, who was employee number one at Nike. And then Vin Lanana took it over. And then Gags was the coach. And then what happened in 2000, I believe it was 6 or 7, Lanana had gone up to Oregon, as you know, and he asked Gags to bring the farm team up there. And the farm team basically became the original group of the OTC Elite. So there was obviously already OTC, but this was that OTC Elite team that eventually went up there. I had stopped running in 2004. For the farm team, but they moved up, I think, two years later.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I was trying to connect the dots because I knew they were somehow connected, but then I couldn't figure it out. But that makes a lot of sense. So then where did you go after you stopped running professionally?
I moved to North Carolina. My wife's from North Carolina, and we had two of our three kids at that point. And I moved back, and I was working in finance at the time. So when I was running for the Nike Farm Team in Palo Alto, I was working in finance, because I was a good B heat runner, you know, like heat two. I was a really good heat three runner, you know, like that was heat three. I'm going to be up there battling for the win. If I'm in heat one, I'm rabbiting. You know what I mean? That was
I'm getting paid, but not to finish.
No, I'm not that good. I'm not getting paid to wrap it. It's just, if you want to run in the seat, you know, the seated heat on Saturday, you're rabbiting something on Friday. That was where I kind of stood in the order of importance by the coach, you know? So I was just happy I was entered in a race at that point. So, but I was working in finance, which worked out well because practice was at 3, the market closed at 1. I didn't like the job, but it paid the bills, you know, which is what almost all of us were working at the time. It was maybe one or two people on the entire farm team that didn't work and only ran. So then I moved back to North Carolina, worked in finance, still did not like the job. But there was an opportunity. Eventually, every year I would send an application, a resume back to the high school that I went to, even though I knew there were no history jobs, but I would just send it in there, just like, you know, if there is, I keep sending you these resumes year after year after year, but nobody quits teaching history. It's like the greatest job in the world. You sit around telling stories. This is not a terrible job. So, but I was working a high school cross country camp, which tells you how much of a nerd I am. I mean, my vacation time, I'm working a high school cross country camp in the woods.
Yeah, wait, which camp is it?
This is back in the day. It doesn't exist anymore. It was the Colt cross country camp, which was run by my old high school. And then my wife and I took it over. Eventually it was Bennett running camp. But so I was working that in late August, and I got a call that someone left and could you be there in like 2 days to interview. And I was already in Pennsylvania. We were living in North Carolina. The school's in New Jersey. I called my wife. I said, can I go do this? Can I go do the interview? She said, yeah, go do it. Went up, had the interview. They offered me the job. I said, just give me a minute. I went out in the hallway, called my wife and said, they just offered me the job. Can I take it? She said, yes. Hung up. I said, I'll take it. And suddenly, like, you know, I'm on cloud 9 now. I'm walking to my car. And I probably realized it around the same time my wife did, that neither one of us had asked how much it paid. So I was going from finance to teaching and coaching at the high school level. It was a very significant change.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, that must just be a big passion of yours. You're going to leave a finance job to become a teacher.
Yeah. It was, It also tells you probably how good I was at finance. But it was the greatest job in the world. And you just find ways to make it work. I mean, my wife and I started a sleepaway cross-country camp. We had 2 weekly cross-country day camps. We had 2 weekly track and field day camps. We put on races. We put on clinics. I mean, there's a difference between being exhausted, doing stuff you hate, which a lot of people go to work and they don't like their job and they're exhausted. And then you have people who love their job and they work their ass off and they're just as exhausted, but they're exhausted for different reasons. And it's a much nicer fatigue.
Yeah.
And you're satisfied as opposed to just resentful at the end of the day that like part of my life is being robbed by doing something I don't like to do. So it was 365 days a year. It was year round and loved every minute of it. Doesn't mean it was easy, but I loved it.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Do you have any advice for people that like want to take that leap? Like maybe they do hate their job, but then they just feel stuck.
Yeah, I think if you know what matters to you and you're being honest with yourself, you're not going to regret making less money. You know, I mean, you just have to decide what matters to you. Like we went away after the sleepaway cross country camp in Southern New Jersey. And that was our trip every year. That was it. It was like 3 days at the beach with our kids. The rest of the time, like you're not going on trips, but we also don't hate 8 hours of our life every single day, you know? And I had done a job I didn't like for 7 straight years. So the idea of working really hard and being tired doesn't mean you're never frustrated. It doesn't mean you have bad days or don't have bad days. It's just, if this is really what you want to do, you make it work. And suddenly I always say this, and it's the same thing I think with runners, whether it's new runners or someone who says, I think I want to run in college or I want to run post-collegiately and I'm afraid of the sacrifices. If you're sacrificing for something you care about, you should end up with more after the sacrifice. If you're sacrificing something and you're ending up with less, then something's off. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because there are always going to be things in your life that you're going to have to make sacrifices for. But if it's a worthy sacrifice, you end up with more of the good stuff. You know what I mean? Maybe you end up with less time, but there's a little bit more joy. Or you end up with less money, but there's way more satisfaction. You know what I mean?
It almost doesn't even seem like a sacrifice in that when you're making the right one. It's definitely like not.
Yes. Well, you're never sacrificing the good stuff. I mean, that's what's important. Yes, you may be sacrificing a Friday night, you know, because there's a long run the next day, but there's a lot of joy that you experience of, you know, that long run with your friends or, you know, feeling good in the morning. You know, there's a lot of good stuff. Sometimes we always focus on what we're giving up and not what we're getting in return. So,
yeah, I like that a lot. So you were coaching at the Christian Brothers Academy, right?
Over
to your bio.
Yeah. CBA in New Jersey.
Yeah. That's like pretty legendary school. How long were you there for?
I was there for 7 years. So I started in the fall of 2007.
Okay.
And I was there until spring of 2014.
Okay. I remember your team at NXN.
Yeah.
So me and my team made it 2 years, 2010 and 2011. And I remember the Lincroft boys.
Yeah.
I don't really remember that much about them. I just remember interactions with
the team. Good. Those were good teams. Yeah. And we were, it took a couple years to kind of get where we wanted to be, but then, 2010, we finished fifth and we won in 2011. And then we were fourth in 2012 and we were second in 2013. So it was nice. It was different groups of kids each time.
Yeah.
And, which is always exciting, you know, because there's always new athletes like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Because, you know, it's important to remember that, you know, especially when you're running at a high level or you're doing anything at a high level, you can forget that this is not normal. And I try to stress that. I tried to stress it a lot when I was coaching high school. Like, you know, I know this is kind of your peer group, but just remember, this is some rare air.
Mm-hmm.
And especially at something like NXN, which is, you know, obviously Nike Cross Nationals, you know, everyone there is used to being extraordinary, but that's not normal. And you can, there's some benefits to that because you have expectations that are very high. You know, you're willing to work hard, but sometimes you can forget to take a moment and look around and say like, wow, what I'm doing is extraordinary. And my expectations are really high and the competition is really tough. And you start ending up beating the crap out of yourself or not taking the time to say, holy shit, like, this is amazing. And yes, it's amazing. It's a Wednesday. And what you just did was crazy. Most kids are not out there running as far or running as fast or running as consistently, you know, or having these types of goals on their wall. And most of these kids are not beating themselves up when they get second or they get third, you know? So it was nice to have different groups of kids going through and being able to teach them. Cause I think that's an important lesson to take. If you've competed at a high level, to just remember, like, that's not how life is supposed to be at all times.
Yeah.
You know?
I completely relate to that. I remember when I went to NXN, like, I've been running competitively since I was like 8, and I went to NXN my freshman year. I got 52nd, and I thought that was like so incredibly awful. Like, I just remember finishing the race being like, that was like the worst race ever. Oh my gosh, I just got demolished. And I was literally like 13 years old racing against, I look at the results now, it's like, just all these like pro runners that are around me, and
yeah,
I'm like, and it's just so crazy because the perspective that you have when you're running at that level is just, I guess you're just never satisfied. But I guess from your perspective as a coach, watching these teams of athletes going through and being pissed if they get second place, how do you kind of make them feel better? How do you kind of like ground them, I guess?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, because I would get asked by coaches, what's the hardest part about NXN? Or racing at an event like NXN. And I would say it's context. I said, but that was what I would stress more than anything, was telling, let's say, the fifth runner, okay, at the 1K, you're going to be in 150th place. Like, that's where you're supposed to be. And then at 2K, I want you here, and at 3K and 4K and 5K. And at the end, you're going to be in about 100th. And if you can finish in the top 100 anywhere, 96, 97, 95, that's the greatest race you've ever run. Not, don't tell them afterwards when they're confused, like, was that good or bad? Like, they need to know, like, 95th at this race is better than every top five you've ever had, because the quality is so incredible. And if we can have five of you in the top 100, we're going to be one of the top five teams in the country. But a lot of kids don't realize that. So especially at these events, especially at the high school level, but it also happens at the collegiate level, which is why NCAA Cross is such a nightmare for so many people.
Oh my gosh.
It's like no one learned the lesson. But if you can let them know ahead of time what an extraordinary race is, then they're not out there figuring out, like, is this the worst race of my life? Because I feel like I'm running harder than I've ever run before.
Yeah.
So that was, and I would say, like, we're not going to be able to yell out your place. So you're just going to have to look. And if half the field is in front of you, you are exactly where you need to be. Now, you're telling this to someone who, from the age of 14 to 18, has never been out of the top 20 in a race in their life.
Yeah, it's like, how much are they going to listen to that?
And they, but what happens is you just put it in front of them and say, what's our goal? Our goal is to be one of the top five teams in the country. And if we're going to be one of the top five teams in the country, then we have to score, you know, 170 points, which divided by five means we're, you know, we're scoring 35 points per person. That's 35 team points. And you've got 35 individuals, which means we've got to average like 75th place. And if you get 100th and the number one kid on the team gets 50th, we're going to do that. And suddenly they're doing the math, like, wait, our number one athlete's going to get 50th? And you're like, well, if they get 50th and you get 75th, we win. And yeah, it's mind-boggling. But then you break it down. It's like, okay, now we have a plan and we have a goal, because no one's going in there for the most part thinking like, I'm going to win the race, because all the kids know each other for the most part. It just gets confusing beyond like 50th place. And what's the difference between 50th and 100th? And it's only 10 seconds, because it's insane how good everyone is. I mean, you know that. But that context is really important. That never changes no matter the athlete. It's always important to do that, you know? And I think in some ways, those athletes that are not pro or were not all state, they have sometimes a healthier view. I mean, which is why it's nice to see people like when they do a road race, if they have kind of a legitimate time goal, the place doesn't matter. You know, you see people, all you got to do is if you ever go to a marathon and you hang out at the hour marks, you know, where you see sub three and you see the unbelievable joy of people just breaking three and the people not breaking three, how sad they are, or four or five. But like there's context there. Yeah. They're not saying I was 26,000th place at the Boston Marathon. I suck. Yeah. Like you've never heard anyone ever say that. You never hear anyone talk about what place they were at a marathon unless they were top 100.
Yeah.
And no one's really even asking them. They're usually just telling you, I got 87th at the Boston Marathon.
One's asking.
I didn't ask you. I just wanted a coffee. What are you talking about?
Honestly, that's like a really refreshing perspective. I wish, honestly, college coaches did that. I wish like sat down all the freshmen that came onto the team and were like, you're okay if you're getting 100th place in a race.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like you said, these people that are running, I mean, if you're running Division One, these people are coming from, you know, their league meets or their city meets, and they're winning all these races by just seconds and seconds. And then they go and they run, you know, a conference cross-country race or nationals, and they just get destroyed. And you just see it in their faces. Like, I mean, people are just not ready for it. Yeah. And I mean, I was kind of ready for it because of the NXN experience I had and like other high school meets I went to, just kind of getting my doors blown off, that I was kind of like expecting it, but it just still is, it's really unglamorous. And my college coach, we won NCAAs one year and our fifth runner got like 68th place or something. And she said after the race, she's like, there's nothing glamorous about getting 68th place at a meet, but that is like what ends up deciding the final like tally of the results. Like, we won by 1 point, and the 68th or 69th place is what won us the title. So it's just crazy.
68th is not created equally everywhere. I mean, 68th at NCAAs is, you are a rock star.
Yeah.
I mean, you are an absolute rock star if you get 68th at the NCAA meet. But it's not just, you know, one, that you're saving the athlete from massive amounts of confusion and potentially despair by doing this, but it's also just basic coaching. Like, especially in cross country, times don't mean anything. Like, they're just meaningless. And they're more meaningless when you start trying to use the same times on different courses. Like, I want you going through the mile in 5 flat. And you're like, this course is not like that course. What are you talking about? But positioning matters because it's your score. So it's just, I'm wildly confused when I hear coaches giving like goals revolving around times in cross country. Cause it's like, that's so stupid. Like, just, you want your athlete at certain places and then sliding up at certain points based on the course on places and all that stuff. So yeah, it's one, it's healthier for the athlete to kind of process what the goals are in a cross country race. But it's also just really simple, easy coaching too.
Yeah. It's like, how many people are wearing their watch in a cross country race and are paying attention?
Please don't ever do that. It just makes no sense. Unless you're running the same course every single week.
And maybe you're by yourself, maybe.
Yeah, but it's all about place. So, all right, we just fixed cross country. I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
There we go. We just fixed the sport.
Yeah, there we go.
Today's episode of the podcast with Coach Bennett is brought to you by Koros. I have been rocking with the Coros Pace 2 GPS Premium Sport Watch. You guys know, if you follow me on TikTok especially, I've been using it every single day, and on my YouTube videos, I've been shouting it out on there because I absolutely love this watch. I have the white one, the white Pace 2. I'm sure you guys have already seen a bunch of professional runners wearing the Coros watch. It's their lightest watch ever. It only weighs 29 grams, which means that it's not gonna feel weighed down on your wrist when you're running or when you're ripping a track workout. Speaking of track workouts, the Coros watch is by far my favorite GPS watch for track sessions. A lot of other runners highlight this as well, but it just really stands out in terms of ability to track the track workouts. It also has a really, really good heart rate monitor. And for someone like me right now, I'm slowly building up my mileage and I'm really putting an emphasis on keeping my running easy, especially after recording this podcast with Coach Bennett. I have made it an effort to keep my heart rate under 160 on every single easy run I go on. That's still a little bit high, but the Coros Pace 2 really helps keep me in line when it comes to easy running. It also is super easy to use. All you have to do is press two buttons and then you're off and running. It's really simple to also sync the watch to the app and Strava. It's just automatic and instant. The battery life, 10 out of 10. I can go for a week without charging this watch, which says a lot because a lot of GPS watches, you have to charge them every single day, but the Coros Pace 2, magnificent. Right now, you can go to coros.com, that's C-O-R-O-S.com, and they gave us a discount code. So use code COLDBREW for a free accessory with a watch purchase. All you have to do is just add the accessory, like a band, a charger, or a piece of apparel to the cart before checking out, and you apply the code COLDBREW, and you get that accessory for free with a watch purchase. Again, I highly recommend the Coros Pace 2. Phenomenal watch. Head to coros.com, that's C-O-R-O-S.com, and use code COLDBREW to get that free accessory with the watch purchase. Now let's get back into today's episode with Coach Bennett.
Okay, well, I want to talk about your involvement with Nike, because did that come right after CBA, or what was the progression to becoming the global head coach?
Since I had a relationship in the past with Nike just for running for the farm team, when I moved back east, it really started, I think initially, maybe it was the first year my wife Tammy and I took over the cross country camp. She reached out and said, you know, if you want to come and bring your like spike bus or something to our camp, go ahead. And then we were doing Sunday long runs. So myself and another local coach, I mean, I knew from running in high school that like, I wasn't going to do a long run in the summer. Just like, it wasn't going to happen, you know, on my own. It just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And if it was going to happen, it was going to be me saying, I'll go to the beach first, then I'll do my long run, which means guaranteed it's not going to happen. Cause I'm walking off the beach at 4, you know, sunburned and dehydrated, and all I want to do is get inside some air conditioning. I'm not going for a run. So I was like, okay, how do I get my athletes to run? I said, well, I'll make it fun. So I'll do a lot of the footwork for them. So on Sundays, I'll get together and I'll go out and I'll get like a bunch of watermelons. I'll get some music. I'll get some Gatorade. I'll invite another team or two, put everyone in the right groups. And when they come back, they can just hang out and they'll eat. And that turned into maybe like 30 kids. And eventually 2 years later, it was 300 showing up from all over like the tri-state area. And we started having college kids showing up, and then parents were showing up and bringing their kids and saying, well, we'll run while our kids are running. And it just turned into this huge phenomenon every Sunday for 8 weeks during the summer. And word kind of got out that there were 300 kids getting together to do, you know, 8, 10, 12 mile runs in the summer. And so Nike said, well, could we bring some people down and, you know, we can hand some shirts out, and shoelaces, and, you know, can we do that? I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to stop you from handing shoelaces and shirts out to the kids.
Love free stuff. So
I said, it would be cooler if you could bring a lot of Gatorade and stuff like that too. So they did that. And then it just started turning into, you know, we're going to have athlete interviews at Penn Relays. Could you come and do that? And I said, you know, as long as it doesn't interfere with our racing, then yes. So it was one thing after another. And then starting, I think it was in 2013, it was like the 10th anniversary of the Nike Free. So they said, we want to do something in the Fifth Avenue store where it's based on treadmills and it's celebrating the Nike Free, but we don't know how to make treadmills fun. And I was like, you can make running on the treadmill fun. I'm like, how? So I was like, well, so I wrote a couple of workouts for the treadmill. Cause yeah, I coach in Jersey. So there's days where it's, you can't run outside, and you have a couple treadmills. You're trying to get like 15, 20 people on a treadmill and you have three of them. It's like, you got to keep it like active. You got to keep it moving and you got to make it fun because the treadmill can get really boring really fast. So I did that and it was a big hit, and they asked to come back in 2014 and do it. And then I remember it was the spring of 2014. I got asked to come into the city and I wasn't sure why. I just thought they were going to ask questions about something. And they said, we've got kind of a hypothetical for you. We have, if runners were coming into a store and they're going for runs, but there's really no rhyme or reason to what they were doing, like, what would you do with them? So I just went through like this whole process. I'm like, well, I would treat them like elite athletes. And they're like, well, no, they're not elite athletes. These are just like people coming in. They would just want to go run. I'm like, okay, I would treat them like elite athletes. I said, why would I treat them like anything else? Like their goal is the same as an elite athlete, which is very simple. End the run better than you started, in one way or an infinite variety of ways. What's the problem? So I had this whole schedule and so these different runs every day, because you want to mix things up, and you know, you can drop in if you want to, you can do all 7 days. It doesn't matter. You can do 2 out of 3 days. The point is whenever you show up, we're going to give you the best run you can possibly have. And that's it. So they said, well, would you do that? I said, I just spent 20 minutes. Like, this is what, and they said, no, like, would you do that? And I was like,
this is like a
job interview.
Yeah.
So then I said, yes, but there's a few things like I stand for. And if you ask me to go against this stuff, like, then I'm just going to tell you no. And if you're okay with that, then fine. So I wrote like a couple things out on a white legal pad, and they said, okay. And I said, all right, well, let me go home and discuss this and we'll figure it out. And that was the start.
So were you just as excited as your CBA position offering, or was it just different?
I mean, it was different because there was, I would say the thing that interested me the most was at that point you had, there's like three levels. I think there's like youth running, which is inclusive of high school. There's like pro running. And then there's like the middle, and the middle is the most, but youth running had changed so dramatically in the previous 15 years. Like when I was in high school, it was just a joke. Like, it was the dark ages of running, especially in the United States. Like, we were just so bad compared to what all of you have made it. Look at it now.
Now it's completely different. Even when I was in high school.
Yeah. It's another jump of in the last 10 years, but there's a couple reasons for that. I mean, some of it was the internet, and it was things like Diestat, and it was runner space. And a lot of these, the focus was on high school. So kids got to look up to their peers, as opposed to having to look up to the pros that you didn't have access to.
Yeah,
you know, like they weren't on TV anymore, and the streaming hadn't started yet. So it was really hard to have, you know, kind of heroes in the sport. So the heroes became each other, which is really powerful and really cool. You know, like you're inventing your own rock stars, you know what I mean? And then I think NXN completely changed the sport, because it now celebrated the seventh runner. And if you're celebrating the seventh runner, there's an eighth, a ninth, and a 10th runner who really want to be the sixth or seventh runner. So now you have 10 athletes really at minimum working. And as a result, it's much easier to push from the back than it is to pull from the front. And I think one of the reasons why the sport got so good is because you had a lot of mid-pack runners making huge jumps, and that pushed the front of the pack. So I think this kind of renaissance of high school running, that was because of the middle of the pack. The middle of the pack just got way, way, way better. And then you had the pros, which benefited from what happened at the birth of NXN and some things were happening in the late 90s and 2000s. And so distance running just got really good at the top and at the young level, the youth level. The middle, nothing had changed. Like, it wasn't like road races were getting more popular. It wasn't like road races were getting faster. And you still had, we were like this massive sport that most people didn't even know they were a part of it. I mean, you go out, if you went out today and you ran by people running and you said, do you know who? And you named 20 elite runners. Most people would be like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
What are you talking about? Is pro running a thing?
I'm not even a runner. And you're like, are you running right now? then you're a runner. And they're like, no, I just run and occasionally do 10Ks and marathons. And you're like, what? But you're not a runner?
Yeah.
So if you went to a basketball court and you saw 3-on-3 girls playing and you asked them like who their favorite basketball player was, they're going to immediately have an argument about who the greatest basketball players are. Because they're playing hoops, they're a part of the sport. Mm-hmm. With us, we have this 97% of the people who run think they're just taking part in an activity and not a sport. So to me, it was, I'm not sure Nike knew that's what was kind of the agenda, but I was like, if we could get people to run the right way, they're going to run more. If you can get them to become a fan of the sport, they're going to run even better and enjoy it even more. What if we combine the two and we get people to really experience this the right way? Because it's their sport. Like if you run, it's yours. Like take ownership of it, have some fun, be a fan, you know? So that was what excited me, was how can I work on that? Which means there isn't a level that you're not involved in, because it's all connected.
So was that how the Nike Run Club came about, and you started doing guided runs from that perspective of just trying to, I guess, bridge the gap between everyone?
That was a little bit later. It started out with just live events. So it started out with live events in New York. But it was the same idea. So for instance, it was getting people together. I remember the first, second gathering of people. There was like 150 people. We were in Brooklyn, and there was a race the next day. I didn't know there was a race the next day. You know, I was getting used to like who I'm working with. It's all adults now. I was just working with teenagers. And we're supposed to do a long run. And again, it's a very different vibe, because I was coaching people, you know, people that I saw almost every single day year round. And now I've got 150 or 250 people in front of me I've never met before.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And we're supposed to be doing I set it up where like we'll have a 4 mile run, an 8 mile run, and a 12 mile run. And we'll get everyone in different pace groups and all this stuff. And then I said, someone had mentioned, like, you know, a lot of people are going to be doing the Central Park 10K tomorrow. So I said, oh, really? It's okay. I said, who's running the Central Park 10K? And, you know, like 3/4 of the people rose their hand. And I'm like, none of you are doing the long run today. And they're like, what? And I'm like, not one of you is doing the long run today if you're racing. I'm like, you're going there and you're going to run easy and you're not going to try to run hard, fine. But if any of you are racing, not one of you is doing the long run today. You can do the 4 miler. And people were like, what are you talking about? And I just said, I went off. I was like, I could not think of something more stupid than to do a long run and then race the next day. I'm like, and that's not what we're here to, we're not here to be stupid. You know, we're here to run smart. And it was important to me that they understood, like, there's reasons why you get hurt. There's reasons why you get sick. There's reasons why you wonder, like, why do I not want to do this anymore? And it means I can't lie to you. Like, it's a really dumb idea to do a long run and race the next day. What am I supposed to do? Say, I don't know you, so I'm going to just lie to you?
Yeah.
I was like, that's not going to happen. But at the same time, it was important to me to introduce them to things that they'd never seen before. So I remember in the spring, I was like, could we get a bunch of buses and bring people to Penn Relays? And they're like, what do you mean? I said, exactly what I said. Let's get a bunch of buses. We'll take them to Penn Relays. We'll go on Friday. It'll be nuts. We'll talk about the Jamaica USA rivalry. We'll talk about all of like the Arkansas Georgetown stuff and the Villanova stuff. We'll talk about all the high school relays and the Championship of Americas. We'll get everyone to pack. We'll talk about like when you're watching somebody pass someone else, you go, whoop, whoop. It'll be crazy. It'll be nuts. And it was eye-opening to so many people, because they had never seen this part of the sport. And these are people who are training to run the New York City Marathon and the Brooklyn Half, and they like running, but they didn't know track and field even existed. And now they're suddenly at Franklin Field and they're cheering, you know, the Women's College Championship of America Sprint Medley Relay, and they're losing their mind because it's like 200 meter runners and 400 meter runners and an 800. And they're like, what's happening? This is crazy. And, you know, is Texas going to lose? And I'm like, Villanova's pretty good this year. You know, it's just, but it was so exciting and so much fun that suddenly you could see their entire, like, the spectrum of what running could be.
Yeah.
Added a few more colors to it. And I was like, this is how you get people to make it a lifelong sport that they enjoy, as opposed to something that becomes tedious or just, well, I ran 26.2 miles, check. I lost 15 pounds, check. And it's like, it's gotta be about more than that. It's gotta be about enjoying it and having fun. And sometimes sitting in the stands or along the road and cheering for other people and realizing you can run a track race.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 40 years old or I'm 26 and I've never run before. And you want me to do a track race? I used to tell people after the New York City Marathon, like when they would say, I'm thinking of doing a spring marathon. And I'd say, what you should be doing is the Tuesday night races at the Armory. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what? And I'm like, oh yeah, punk rock track and field. That's what indoor track is. You need to do some indoor track. And people thought like, that's, I'm not allowed to do that. Like you have to have done it in high school or college. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
Get out there and have some fun. So that was kind of the goal, was to hopefully introduce people to running the right way, running for more than just running, but also introduce them to the entirety of the sport.
Brief little intermission here to talk about one of my favorite sponsors of the podcast, especially during the summertime. It is Gooder. Gooder makes $25 active sunglasses for anyone. They are lightweight, comfortable, they don't move when you run, and they're all for only $25. They're no slip, no bounce, all polarized, and all fun. The fact that they are polarized for $25 and they don't bounce when you run on your face, that is incredible. Some may say that they're the best sunglasses ever invented, and I would have to agree with that because they're $25. Really good quality, they are incredible. They have really funny names. The one I've been rocking with lately is called Bosley's Basset Hound Dreams. I can't even say that with a straight face. My go-tos are a ginger sole. They're just like black square sunglasses. I wear them every single time I go out running. They're also just really cute, so whether I'm on a run, on a hike, or I'm just running errands, I'm always wearing my Gooders. If you have a friend whose birthday is coming up, or you just want to surprise your friend with a gift because receiving gifts is their love language, Gooder sunglasses is a perfect gift for them. So try them out, and honestly, treat yourself to a pair or two because you deserve it. Go to Gooder.com, that's Goodr.com, and get 15% off your entire order when you use code COLDBREW at checkout. All orders over $50 get free shipping in the United States. That's 15% off with code COLDBREW at www.goodr.com. Look good, run gooder. Now let's get back into today's episode with Coach Bennett.
So why do you think, like, normal people, I guess you could call them, like, why don't they watch pro track and field, or why are they so intimidated of something like the track nights at the Armory? Like, what is stopping them?
Well, track's a little different because, I mean, I think most people, you associate track with the highest level of the sport, because the yeah. only time you ever see it is either you were in high school and there were kids that did it, which means you did not.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's already a difference. They do it, I don't. It's like a football field. If you're looking at the football field and think like the only way to play football is to put pads on and beat the crap out of each other, then you wouldn't see so many people playing football in sand lots on the weekend. Same yeah. thing as basketball. If you think like you have to wear a jersey and it has to be 5-on-5 and there has to be a ref and there has to be a clock, then you wouldn't see as many people at the park just shooting around baskets. But you do. With running, though, there's like this disconnect. Like, in all I ever see is it on TV a couple times a year tops, because I think we do ourselves a disservice to think like, yes, is track accessible for a track fan? Yes, because we know where to look. The average person has no idea where to find these meets. They don't even know what they mean.
All you have to do is just hop on to Runner Space and then subscribe yeah. to Runner Space Plus, but, and then you sure. got it.
And yes, but it's they don't know that exists, nor is yeah. it a coherent schedule. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every other sport has a trajectory and there's something at the end that makes sense. But I think there's just a huge disconnect between like what they're doing is I'm like maybe early on a distant relative, but they find out they're actually like siblings with those runners out there on the track. Like, you're pretty much doing the same thing. That's part of it. I think people just assume like, I don't do that, I've never done it, it's not for me. The other part is most people run the wrong way, so they hate running, and that's all they know.
Yeah.
And that never gives them the chance to run enough to want to explore. So what happens for most people is, I mean, the overwhelming majority of people who start running later on, not through a team, they usually start out of a negative reaction to themselves. There's something like, I don't like this about me, I don't like that about me, I'm going to start running, which is a really terrible starting line.
Starting from a negative aspect of yourself, yeah. that's going to bode well for something that's really painful.
Yeah. So it's usually like, I want to change this about me, I want to change that about me, I want less of this, I want less of that. And it, you know, some of it is just semantics. If you just said like, rather than you know, I think a damaging way to start running is I want to like lose weight, as opposed to just saying like, I want to get fitter. Mm-hmm. What a much more badass
yeah.
view on your run. Like, but the next part is most people don't know how to run. So most people start out too hard.
Yeah.
And then they start to hurt too early, and then they stop too soon. And then they think they're not enough and they suck, which if you're already starting from a bad place and then you're ending the run thinking you're not good enough,
it just makes it even worse.
Yeah. Who wants to keep coming back to that? So yeah. If you can get people to experience it the right way, really what you're doing is you're giving them an opportunity to run a next time. And that's the only purpose of a first run, is that there's a next run. So then from a coaching point of view, like that's all you want of a first run, is you want the athlete to come back because you want another chance to talk to them. Like that's the only thing you're focusing on. So like, if I'm talking like new coaches, like when you have like freshmen, it's like the only thing you want to do is get them to fall in love with the sport by the end of freshman year. Nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. Like the running they're going to accomplish freshman year, none of it matters unless they love the sport. And that frees up a lot of like, oh, okay, there's not that much pressure other than just make sure they're having a good time and running well. They're going to run just fine if they love the sport.
Yeah.
They will work harder. They will take on more. They will fight longer if they love it. And I think it's the same thing with anyone else. If you can get people to experience the sport the right way, suddenly it's like, maybe I will check out that indoor track race. But they're not doing it on their second run.
Yeah.
It's that 100th run, that 200th run, that 300th run where suddenly you can say, hey, I want to talk about some indoor track. And yeah. Now that's the time where they're like, okay, what the hell is indoor track? You're like, it's what you're doing on Tuesday night, Rockstar. And then it's basic stuff of just how to present the sport and the order that you present the sport. But I think you got to get people to enjoy the activity first before they can love the sport.
So what is like something that you would say most people get wrong with training, like how they approach training?
They run too hard and they try to run too far. I mean, that's like, I'll give you like an example. Like there've been times when, you know, pre-COVID, when we used to have groups and stuff get together, and hopefully that's all starting now. But, you know, I'd be working with a large group of people and they'd see a group of people run by in the distance, let's say. And if this is on Nike's campus, you know, it could be a really fast group of people. It might not be, who knows? But inevitably someone would be like, oh, I can't run like that. I'd say, you can run like that today. I'm like, no, I can't. I'm like, yeah, you can. I'm like, the pace is different and how far you're running is different. But all they're doing right now is it looks like all they're doing is running and laughing right now. I'm like, yeah, but I can't run and laugh. I'm like, no, you can, as long as you don't run too hard.
Yeah.
But that's what they're doing. They're just not running hard. They're doing an easy run. But for most people, that doesn't exist. It's, I run really hard and I can't do anything. And what they don't realize is the overwhelming majority of their runs should be them being like, I could go way faster than this. But rather than realizing that's smart running, they assume it's slow running. And that term, I hardly ever use the term slow running because it has such negative connotations for people. I'm just like, it's being smart. Like,
yeah.
Slow is always in relation to something else. So if you're a slow runner, that means you're also a fast runner. You can't only be one. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But I think most people, they start out and they assume because classes are 30 minutes long, or I used to be able to do this, that everything, it's like, I got to run for 30 minutes, or I got to start by running for 5K, and I got to run a pace that I used to run, or it just has to hurt. The guided runs work so well because I take the blame for everything. I'm just like, look, I'm going to ask you to run really easy and you're going to hate me for it. Or you're going to think I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm doing, but I do know what I'm doing. So you can blame me for not making you hurt.
Yeah.
But this is how you're supposed to run. And it's just giving them the excuse to run the right way, which is what most people need. They literally need the excuse to run the right way because they've only known how to run the wrong way. So once you unlock that, amazing things happen. Like crazy things happen.
I think I need you to be ingrained into my head when I'm running. I think I'm just only going to listen to your guided runs now when I run.
It's fine. Start.
I need
start
that
anywhere. Yeah.
I need that positive outlook.
We all do. I'm kind of lucky because when I leave my neighborhood, I go uphill. So I'm like forced not to be an idiot, you know, like,
yeah.
And you have to, like, I go back to like that humility thing. Like I'm not trying to be who I was when I was running for the Nike Farm Team. So that's number one. But what you forget sometimes, if you've been in the sport for a long time or you've been running the wrong way, I forget that I used to start my runs really, really easy. It's just that, again, the numbers were different on my watch. And when I go back to like, hey, we're all kind of on the same like story arc. It's the same process over and over again. My runs, like if you were to look at just like a well done run by me today, it's probably shorter than it was, definitely shorter than it was, let's say 20 years ago. But if you take the numbers out, it's the exact same thing. So it started at its slowest, it ended at its fastest, but it was never fast on an easy run. It's just, I mean, if you think back to when you were running in college, the first couple of minutes of your run, what are you doing? You're either laughing or complaining with your buddies for like 10 or 15 minutes. Yeah. There's always someone in the back saying like, oh, I feel horrendous. And no one's listening to
them. That was like me every
time. And everyone ignores you. Yeah, everyone ignores you and they laugh and they joke. They complain about a test. They're talking about this person or that person. And then you kind of settle into a groove. The pace picks up naturally. No one even realizes it. No one's like, we need to drop 5 seconds per K. It's just naturally happening because now your body's warmed up. And by the end, if you're feeling pretty good, the pace picks up a little bit even more, but it's never out of control because that's not the purpose of the day. We're not doing a workout. We're just supposed to be doing a recovery run. And then it ends. Now, if you compare that to today, a well-run today, it's the same trajectory. It's just the numbers are different, but it's the exact same thing. I'm starting out, I'm complaining or I'm laughing. And then the conversation kind of goes, I settle in. And by the end, I'm running probably faster than I was at the beginning. And that's it. It was a good run. The distance and the pace doesn't matter.
I have a question for you because this is something I struggle with now, like, you know, post-collegiately, I'm run for fun. How do I not compare myself though to my old self? Like, this is just a constant narrative in my head is me just, every step I take is just so much. Well, it's also because I'm not consistent because I'm too negative in my head and I'm running all wrong. Yeah. But how do I just like get past just being slower than I used to be, I guess?
Well, I guess you have to start with just what an unbelievably limited measurement of success you have, like for running. I mean, because if you think about it, like you kind of have to come to terms with the fact that like, it really is. It's kind of pathetic that the only thing you're measuring the success of your running by is the pace.
Yeah.
Like, and if you go back and think, wow, like, I wonder how much better I would have run if I had some of the kind of views or measurements of success that I have now. Like, could you imagine? And I'm looking back, because it was the same thing when I got out of college and I actually stopped competing. I had a hard time trying to figure out what the purpose of what I was doing, because the purpose for 15 years was all wrapped around how fast can I cover 1,609 meters? Like, how fast can I run a mile? Like everything year round, even when I was doing cross country or running a 5K, it was like, this all is going to hopefully come back to how fast I can cover just over 4 laps on a track. Mm-hmm. Else mattered. And I got so much enjoyment out of running that I wasn't ever really looking at directly. It was always kind of like peripheral. Like looking back now, the stuff I miss the most is post-run legs in the steeple pit where you're just talking with the team. It was the bus rides. It was the miserable runs in terrible weather where basically everybody just complains for 90 straight minutes. You know, it was being totally exhausted after a track workout on a warm track. You know what I mean? Like all of these things I never really embraced fully because I was so focused on how can I run a mile as fast as I can? And knowing now, I would have run way, way faster had I fully embraced just how great everything around the sport was. And if I had, on those really terrible days when I was 19 and I was miserable because, you know, of a breakup or a bad test or something like that, if I had used running, it's like, I'm just going to go out and just have a nice run as opposed to end, shit, I got to run 8 miles right now. Because I got to get fit, as opposed to being like, I'm going to use the 8 mile run as just a way to just decompress and just be alone with my thoughts. And, you know, maybe I'll actually listen to music, which, you know, if you're running in college, you're not listening to music. You know,
listen to music. I had to keep myself sane.
I was hardcore. Like, you don't listen to anything.
No distractions.
No distractions. When it was like, no, go be distracted and have a run. And I think what you have to do is I tell athletes a lot, like measure success as many ways as you can. So it's not so much that you're never going to compare yourself to what you did. I still do sometimes. And a lot of times it ends though with me really impressed of who I was. And back to that point of like, sometimes it's good to take the time and be like, I was a badass. Like that was really cool. And I should be proud of myself for that. But that doesn't mean you need to beat up who you are today. And I think in some ways you can say, I'm getting a lot of stuff done and I don't have to run and I'm making time to run. That's a victory. Or I'm now running for so many different reasons where I wasn't back then. That's a victory. Like, here's the thing. I know for a fact I'm never going to run a faster mile than I once did. Mm-hmm. I also know every day I could wake up and run the best mile of my life. So, I mean, like, it's just, I'm much more open to there being different types of success than there was, which is pretty cool.
Oh my gosh. I like needed this. I needed this conversation on my own. This is like completely selfish of me, regardless of the listeners, anyone listening to this. This is my episode. Okay. I needed this today. I'm about to go out for a run. I'm not the best one ever. I'm going to do one of your guided runs. I don't want to take up too much of your time. You are like, I think I got to 5 questions that I had on my like 25 question sheets.
I ramble. It's my fault. That's the problem.
No, it's so good. I needed this. So, I guess I'll ask you one more question. Do you have any advice to your younger self? I mean, you kind of just answered that, but that's a question I ask at the end of my podcast every time.
That's a good question.
You know, it doesn't have to be your younger self. I guess it could just be to like just younger people, like my listeners, you know, the 18 to 24 year olds of the sport.
Yeah, I would say it's a long road and there's a lot of exits, you know, and I think, you got to kind of treat it as a road trip. You know, there's going to be some wrong turns and the car is going to break down sometimes and you're going to get lost and you're going to have stretches of no traffic. And sometimes you're going to be in a traffic jam and there's going to be times when you stop and you unexpectedly have the best meal of your life. Or you bump into someone who's going to be a lifelong friend. And sometimes you're dropping people off on the side of the road and other times you're picking them up. I mean, that's the one thing that I think I was lucky, because I was 4th out of 5 kids. And I think that's one of the nice parts of if you're a part of a number of like pretty good teams, you see a lot of ups and downs and you see a lot of comebacks. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of people who maybe quit a little bit too early. And you see a lot of people who maybe didn't realize like it was okay to stop. So I think I was very lucky in just being around a lot of sports, because sports kind of gives you the stage of life, which is a safer place than life. But for that age group especially, I think it's really important to just know that this is not the end of the road. It continues and it goes on. And that it's okay to be insanely happy and devastated. That's a part of the trip, mm-hmm. You know, and that never changes. I think that is one of the reasons why I liked coaching that the level of high school as much as I did, because I'm not sure if there's a period in your life that is more dramatic than 14 to 18. You know, I always compare it to like the Beatles. Like if you look at the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, you know, where they're just like in their suits and they got like their little mop tops and people thought like, ooh, that's long hair. And they're playing, you know, singing, I Want to Hold Your Hand. 4 years later, you should look it up. Look up Helter Skelter by the Beatles. I mean, okay. They look like horrifying characters. That's 4 years. That's high school. Like a lot happens in 4 years, and even more happens in the 4 years between 14 and 18. And I think that helped me a lot too, because I understood like this is like life on fast forward, you know, and if they can handle it, then I can handle what's going on in my life, you know? And it also is nice, being a coach, because you realize when you're going through a tough time, one of the greatest tricks is to just help somebody else, which is also a running trick. I mean, I'm sure you know that. Like I used to use it if a kid was really tired in practice, like during intervals, I would have them help an athlete that was even more tired than them. I'd be like, mm-hmm. Okay, this is what you need to do. You're going to need to just take this next one. They're really hurting. You be with them the entire time. And next thing you know, they run the pace and they're yelling at the athlete the whole time, all this energy somewhere. It's like when you hear about moms lifting the cars off their kids, like
Yeah. We
only come up with that extra strength when we're helping somebody else. So I think that's the other thing. Like if things ever are really, really hard, like find somebody going through a tough time, offer them help, because it gives you purpose and it feels really good to help. So that was like 9 different tips. I'm suddenly telling myself.
No, that was great. Honestly, sorry. I think this is one of like my favorite episodes I've done in a long time, maybe ever since the podcast started.
Great. Let's start with ever. Taunting the other guests.
That's what I know. So this is whoever's next week is going to have a lot to live up to. Well, where can people follow you? Do you have anything you want to plug?
No, not really. I mean, it's I'm in the Nike Run Club app. And so if you want to go for a run, it's the same stuff. We got some cool stuff coming out. It kind of all fits this. We just had a run come out called the It's Okay 5K, which is basically just for 5K, I'm going to talk to you a little about some things that it's okay. Like, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be tired. It's okay to change your mind. Like, the runs come from a very human place. I'm not in there yelling at you to sweat more is basically the point. It's a conversation, I'm in there. And then on Instagram, I'm just Coach Bennett. So, that's if you want to look for me, that's where I'm at. So
amazing. Well, thank you so much for taking time to join us. It was really fun.
Thanks for having me. This was great. And keep doing what you're doing. It's a great sport, and what you're doing, when you share the sport, you save it. So just keep doing what you're doing. It means a lot to a lot of people.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for listening to today's episode of the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I know right after I recorded this episode, I went and ripped an 8-mile run, and I haven't run 8 miles in months. So I was feeling good, and I hope you guys were motivated after this episode. Maybe you go download the Nike Run Club app and listen to one of his guided runs, because he is truly an incredible coach and obviously has a lot of passion for the sport of running, like most of us that listen to this podcast. So don't forget to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's a free way to support, and it seriously means the world to me when I read your guys' reviews. I cannot believe how many people listen to this podcast a lot of the time, and it means the world when someone either comes up to me in person and tells me that they listen to the podcast, or they leave a review on Apple Podcasts and just say how much they enjoy each episode. I cannot tell you how much it motivates me to continue doing the podcast and just how much I appreciate your guys' support. So thank you all so much for listening, and I will catch you all in the next episode next week. Peace out, fellas.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.